now broken. It was us against the world. I wanted to yell. You were standing there screaming as well. I saw you smile. I have to make it.
NASCAR's wild card track, Talladega, left some important marks on some of our championship contenders this past Sunday. This is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu.
Like a NASCAR, ice like a superstar, up and down the boulevard. I get glued, man. You ain't fast like my 3-point shooter, man. 21's on three.
Welcome to week 6 of the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray here in this beautiful October day. Well, this past Sunday's race at Talladega was at the most frightening track to come on NASCAR's chase schedule. Most drivers dread coming to this track mainly due to the fact that with restricted plate racing, you never know how your day is going to turn out. Like every race at Talladega, there was disappointment from Kevin Harvick maybe kissing his attempt at a championship goodbye to happiness from Carl Edwards' strategies working out to a non-chaser spoiling the chaser's parties and ended up in Clint Bowyer's victory. This evening's show will highlight the many headlines Talladega brought on. We're going to talk about points leader Carl Edwards' strategy. Could we call him a coward lion? And in our garage talk, we're going to go back to a topic we discussed a few weeks ago at Pit Stop. But this time, we're going to go a little bit more in depth between the relationship of a driver and a crew chief. And I have this cool video. It's not really a video because you can't see it, but it's going to be a sound clip. From something called The Anatomy of a Pit Stop, and it's going to be really interesting to listen to. So let's just get started. Talladega Super Speedway is a huge track, 2.66 miles. It's a quad oval with 188 laps for 500 miles approximately. The Super Speedway is a tri-oval and has 33 degrees of bankings in the turns. And it has, in the tri-oval, the banking is 18 degrees and about the straights. And so pretty much this track is very high banked. And it's really uncharacteristic to see a track, see this kind of track with this, how big it is, this large structure of a track. They're really not supposed to be made so big. And I think that is why we have these restrictor plates in place and why there's so many dangers coming to a track like this. Because if you have banking, you all automatically know their speed is going to be apparent. Well, yes, you say speed's apparent in every race. Hello, it's NASCAR racing, high speeds. But when there's banking, those speeds increase 10% more at least, because you can arc your cars and go into the corners with more speed, exit the quarters with more speed, because those corners help the car move itself into the next part of the track instead of on straightaways and on more flat tracks, maybe like a Loudon or something, Pocono, where you actually have to physically muscle the car around. So Talladega is a very high-banked, large, and restricted plates, like we've talked about the past few weeks, are in place because of these high speeds. And restricted plates are in place to keep the fans safe. And yes, the drive, it's kind of ironic how we're here, they put these in place to keep the fans safe, but now the driver's a little bit more at risk. But drivers do this every day, and these cars are so safe these days, and there are safer barriers to protect everyone, that the risk of having a terrible accident and not making it through, similar to maybe last week's IndyCar race with Dan Weldon, the risk is much lower in NASCAR because the heads are covered and the cars are just bigger. But continuing on, the Sam's Club 500 was the name of this race, and there were 72 lead changes amongst 26 drivers for 9 cautions. Now, it's cool that we highlight on the 72 lead changes because before the race actually began, track president, Talladega's track president, offered a $100,000 bonus if there were 100 lead changes, and lead changes are very popular. You might be thinking, 100 lead changes? What the heck? It's extremely popular in NASCAR having at Talladega because restricted plates, you just get pushed to the lead within 10 seconds. And so there is plenty of lead changes. You really don't keep your lead for all that long. And so the track president was like, hey, let's do something fun. If you guys can get to 100 lead changes, I'm going to give the person who leads the most laps a $100,000 bonus. So an example of this is Tony Stewart. He led the most laps this past race. He had 30 this past weekend. He had 30 laps led. Now, say we were able to make that 100 lead changes. We were shy of that by about 28 lead changes. We had 72. But if we had 100, then Tony Stewart leading those 30 laps would have been awarded that extra $100,000. But this actually caused a lot of uproar, you could say, in the garage, to fans, just to people watching this race. Because just last weekend when we had that terrible, terrible death of Dan Walden was in that car with that $5 million bonus kind of extravaganza that the IndyCar president put together. So now they're saying, now you're asking for drivers to do 100 lead changes here, just when last week Dan Walden got into a car trying to make that extra $5 million by winning that race from the back and having that bonus, that a lot of people were in uproar and kind of questioned the track president's judgments on that. But, you know, in my opinion, I say totally different situations. And if it's characteristic to have that such high lead changes at Talladega, so I really don't see anything wrong with that decision. But no one, we were, like I said, we're 28 lap lead changes short, so that that bonus was kind of just crossed off. Mark Martin was on pole. Mark Martin won the Coors Light pole for the Good Sam's Club 500 at Talladega, with the speed of 181.367 miles per hour. It was his second pole of the season and his 51st of his career, which is 8th all time. And that's really good, having 51 poles now, given that Mark Martin's had a 20-something-year-old long career. He's been here forever. He is about 54, so, you know, he's been in racing since he was, like, in his 30s. But 51 poles are pretty good. But no one cares about the pole winner. Nobody cares about who leads the most laps. What everyone wants to know is who won the race. And like I said before in our little intro, that was Clint Bowyer. Now, was Clint Bowyer, it's kind of unexpected, but, you know, it's Talladega. You never know. When the white flag waves, you never know who's going to be winning. And most usually at places like Talladega and Daytona, the person who's leading at the white flag does not win the race. So what happened was Jeff Burton, Clint Bowyer's teammate, was leading at the white flag. Bowyer was his pushing partner. And right as he goes into turn four and the start-finish line is like right there, Bowyer moves over on the tri-oval to make his move and to pass Burton. And they had a really big drag race to the start-finish line, where Bowyer was able to just get past him and win the race. But you know what? Even though Jeff Burton didn't win, he had a great day. This is his first top five of the season. We are about, 26. We are about 32 races into this chase. Yes, we are 32 races in this chase. And this was Jeff Burton's first top five of the season. He's had a dismal year, and he just needed something to pick him up. So, yes, it wasn't a win, but you know what? Anything is a win if you haven't had a top five finish the whole year. To round off the top five, there was Dave Blaney. He's one of those go-or-go-home drivers. He started 42nd. He ended up finishing third, which is so good for him, and plus for kids on Monday who decided to stop by his sponsor, Golden Corral. Kids ate free because because Dave Blaney won the race. I mean, finished third, excuse me. Brad Keselowski finished fourth, and fifth was Brian Vickers. Sixth was Casey Kane. Seventh was lap leader Tony Stewart. Eighth was Denny Hamlin, which is very surprisingly considering all the troubles that he went on through during the race, and we'll talk about that. Michael Waltrip, he only makes a couple appearances every year. He wouldn't miss this race. He finished at ninth. And rounding off the top 10 was Martin Truex Jr. Clint Bowyer earned his fifth career victory, and it was of his career, and his first career victory of 2011, his first victory 2011, which is always good to get your first victory out of the way. He gets to end that losing streak for him. And let me just mention this. Last week, what did we talk about? We talked about Roush Fenway Racing getting their 125th win of their history. The week before that, we talked about Hendrick Motorsports getting their 199th win. There is record-breaking everywhere, and that didn't stop this week. With Clint Bowyer's win, his team, Richard Childress Racing, won its 100th race win in its career, in its racing background and career. And it's also, this is good that Clint won, because Clint, this shows that even though Clint Bowyer is moving on to his next phase of life at Michael Waltrip Racing next season, that he was showing his team that he was going to still give it his all, and he was still going to do whatever he could while he was still at Richard Childress Racing, and he did that, and so giving them their 100th win. So now normally I don't talk much about cautions and the wrecks during the show. Usually I talk about the race. I say this person got in a wreck, blah, blah, blah. But Talladega is different. So I'm making a little bit of an exception, and I'm going to tell you about the big ones and everything like that. So we're going to get started at that. The first significant wreck was on, actually, when between teammates, Kyle Busch, who is a chase contender, and his teammate Joey Logano. It was at the pit road entrance. There was kind of a complication, and they're both going in, and all of a sudden, Logano got loose, went across, and Kyle Busch and him touched. There was not much damage that occurred on point leaders. On points contender Kyle Busch's car, but on Logano, he ended up tearing up his tire, his right front tire, because of the wreck. Next was the big one. This involved AJ Allmendinger, Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick are both championship contenders. Kevin Harvick is the big one you got to think about, because he was second in the point standings before coming into Talladega. Juan Pablo Montoya was also involved, and his teammate Jamie McMurray was also involved. What happened was AJ Allmendinger ran across the hood of Kyle Busch, and from there, everything happened. Everything exploded. Many were collected. Kyle had damage, but he was still able. He was not able to recover from this one. He finished dismal in 33rd position. And Kevin, he was not able to recover. He ended his day in the garage, finishing 32nd. That's what happened at Talladega, right? The next wreck was by Bobby Labonte and chase contender, another one, Kurt Busch. It was a bad day for chase contenders, let me tell you. Only seven of them were able to finish outside top 25 and below. So it was not the best day for them. Bobby Labonte lost control of his car, and chase contender Kurt Busch just couldn't avoid him and plowed right into him, just ruining his day. Kurt Busch ended up finishing 36th. And then the last wreck happened late. It was between Regan Smith, points contender Denny Hamlin, and Mark Martin. It was a hard hit for Regan. He went head first into the wall. Mark was pushing Gordon, and then while separating to give his car a little air, Mark turned down into Hamlin, who turned him more arced into Regan, who was sent to the outside wall, and just causing a big wreck. Regan Smith was not hurt, which is always good to hear. That was a really hard straight. It was fast, happened fast right in the corners. It was a hard lick for him, but he was able to make it out okay. But with all these wrecks filled with significant chase contenders, like I mentioned, let's see how the point standings has shaken out, because there's been movement everywhere. Carl Edwards, he was able to have, he finished 11th. He had a great day. He was able to extend his points lead to 14 points. We're going to talk about him in our next section of the show in a little bit to see how his day went and how he got his 11th place finish. The biggest loser of the day would happen to be Kevin Harvick, who started the day in the second position in the chase, but ended it in, he ended it back in fifth. He ranked fifth, losing three positions, and now he is 26 points behind leader Carl Edwards. Theoretically, he's still in it. He can rebound, but that next week when we go to Martinsville. But it was a big hit on him, seeing that he was only about 4 or 5 points out of taking the lead. Matt Kenseth, with Kevin Harvick's woes, Matt Kenseth, even though he did finish 18th, he was able to move up a position to now second in the point standings, 14 points back. Brad Keselowski had the biggest jump with his great day of finishing fourth. He is now in third, only 18 points back. Jimmy Johnson, I haven't really talked about him today. Surprising, isn't it? He had a dismal day, finished 26th. With that 26th place finish, he is up one position. He switched places with Kurt Busch. He is now in seventh, but he is 50 points back. Yeah, he lost 11 points to leader Carl Edwards. And I'm sorry, I am, you know, everyone knows I'm an avid Jimmy Johnson believer. I love him to pieces. I always have hope. But my hope is slowly dwindling down. He is 50 points. That is more than one race out of the championship. But, you know, you never know what happens. Jimmy's next best track is Martinsville. Down, hands down, Dover and Martinsville are his best tracks. And Martinsville is next week. In Jimmy's career, he has only 2 finishes outside the top 10 at Martinsville. How's that for good? So you know what? You never know what's going to happen. He might just win and be right back into this. Martinsville is another one of those kind of wild card tracks because it is only half a mile flat. They call it the paperclip. It is anything can happen. If there's one wreck, there's no way to avoid it, just like at Talladega. So you just never know what's going to happen. Dale Earnhardt Jr., he finished 25th and he stays 9th in the point standings. Denny Hamlin, he, like I told you, he finished 8th. And he was actually finally able to get himself out of that 12th place gutter. He is now one spot up in 11th, 84 points out. He's out of this championship, but hey, at least he's not in 12th, right? It's better, being 11th is better than being last place in the championship standings. Like I said before, 7 out of the 12 chasers finished 25th or worse. So this just was not a good day for chase contenders. And, you know, that is what everyone always is worried about when coming to Talladega, having a bad day such as that. So after the break, we're going to discuss more about Carl Edwards and his strategy for surviving Talladega and whether or not it was a good one or was it a bad one. And, well, I'll share my opinions and what the opinions of others on that. So this is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and we'll be right back.
You know the bed feels warmer sleeping here alone. You know I dream in color and do the things I want. You think you got the best of me, think you've had the last laugh, bet you think that everything good is gone. Think you left me broken down, think that I'll come running back. Baby, you don't know me cause you're dead wrong. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller. Stronger, stronger, just to leave a step in line. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller, doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone. doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. Stand a little taller. Doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone.
Welcome back to the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray. Carl Edwards, you know, about his tactics were a little bit different, yet still the same during the racing season, during the race at Talladega. During this race, he decided not to really race. He just hung out in the back of the pack to try to avoid the big ones, be there at the end to get a good finish, extend his points lead. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't work. Jimmy Johnson and Dale Earnhardt Jr. decided to do the same thing. Didn't work at all. They finished in those places that they, like I told you, 26th, 27th, 25th back there. And they were not able, that's where they were pretty much most of the day, and they were not able to recover from that. But Carl, on the other hand, he made his way. He kept himself way back there, just kind of riding cruise control pretty much, him and his teammate Greg Biffle. And when it was go time, he went, and he got his top 15 finish, finishing in 11th, which is great for Carl because it extends his points lead. But because of this, there's a lot of fans that are extremely disappointed in him and extremely disappointed with Hendrick Motorsports and anyone, a lot of the chase contenders that decided to stay back into those back of the pack most of the day. And this is because they came to see a good race. They wanted to see the chase contenders race, and the chase contenders decided they wanted to protect themselves and protect the points, their points, over giving the fans a good race. And fans are what brings in the money. And so I think they always need to think about the fans first, because it's just plain boring when you just see those either rookies or people who aren't in the chase, or the go-go homers that don't aren't even in NASCAR full time. Those shows, they're the ones that put on the show, and that's not who we want to see. We want to see Carl Edwards. We want to see Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon, Mark Martin. We want to see them all fighting. We want to see these favorite drivers fighting for the win. And that just didn't really happen on this past Sunday. Kevin Harvick and all of Richard Childress Racing. Kevin Harvick was the only chase contender in Richard Childress Racing, but he decided he was going to race. And, you know, there's always the risk of deciding to race. Like I told you, Kevin Harvick did end up wrecking, finishing 36th, diminishing his chance of winning the championship. But you know what? He was out there to put a show on for his fans out there. And I don't like Kevin Harvick, but I'm giving him props for racing. Mark Martin and Jimmy Johnson, they both finished They both started 1 and 2. Jimmy finished second. He started second, excuse me. Mark Martin started first. Yet, they both finished 26th and 27th. They barely even led a couple laps. Mark Martin led 1 lap. Jimmy Johnson led 2 laps. And then they just went right to the back of the pack. And that's where they stayed most of the day. And they just weren't able to get back up there. And that's not something fans want to see. And yes, y'all know I love Jimmy Johnson. I wanted him to stay safe. But, I mean, you got to race a little bit at least. So that is just something that the drivers need to think about when they come to Talladega and stuff. But you know what? Carl Edwards, you really – I am complaining about his tactics, but you really can't, because you can argue it. You can't argue with the results. Carl finished 11th. He extended his points lead to 14 points. He is now pronouncing himself – that just pronounced him as the favorite to win this championship. He is now the favorite to win because of this performance. He was able to do something that most of the other chasers were not able to do, which is get a good finish, get out of Talladega, and try to pad a points lead, get up there, and that's what he did. So, well, many of the other chase contenders, a few of them actually did slice and dice the way to the front, only to get caught up in crashes and not making their own. Carl did the hardest thing a racer can choose to do, and this is hard for racers to do, because if you are a racer, do you really want to stick in the pack, back of the pack the whole day? He chose to be passive over aggressive at a place where running 4 wide at 200 miles per hour is an occupational hazard. His car, he drives number 99, it barely registered on the leaderboard and happened to show up on the television broadcast almost as an aftermath. They're like, oh, wait, look. There's Carl Edwards. He wasn't one of those main storylines throughout the day. He pretty much played hide and seek with Talladega. He's just like, if you can catch me, here I am. But I'm not going to get up into this mess and ruin my championship hopes. And this is mostly because back in 2008, Carl had the points lead. But he made a dumb error and he crashed his teammate accidentally when they were bump drafting in the corners. Dismal finish. He crashed himself out. A couple of his teammates out. You can say goodbye to his championships, championship hopes right then and there. And that moment has always been in the back of his head ever since that happened. So, you know what? Yes, I'm not a big fan of this strategy of hanging down the back. But you know what? Carl, he wanted some redemption. And he finally got his redemption. Because, you know, it's just sometimes that's how it works. Sometimes it's a good strategy to stay hanging in the back. It works sometimes, like I said, Carl Edwards, it works for him. But sometimes it's Talladega. You're going to end up the victim no matter where you are. It could happen in the front, in the middle, in the back. You can be leading the race 1 second, and the next second you could be getting pulled away by one of those with the hauler and getting just pulled away by one of those tow trucks. And you're sitting in the infield care center making sure that you're okay. So that's what Talladega does to you. So I'm just going to read off a little bit to what his thoughts of his 11th place finish are. I don't know if I've ever been excited about an 11th place finish as I am. This race is one of the most nerve-wracking for everyone. We came here with a small points lead and we're leaving with a bigger one. That's a huge day for us. And really, that is the bottom line. Yes, we all want to see great races. And yes, I would rather have seen a good race than a boring one. But the bottom line is he did what he came to do. He came to extend his points lead, and that's what he did. And you kind of have to applaud him on that one, because it is really hard for race car drivers just to sit back and say, I'm not going to race today. I'm going to be passive. I'm not going to be aggressive. I'm going to sit back. Even though playing it safe is playing it more on the smart side, just kind of think, what if Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, or even Kurt Busch did this? Especially Kevin. What if Kevin decided to do what Carl did and stay in the back most of the day and then come up to the front? Maybe he would have finished right behind Carl on Sunday and instead of in the garage, kicking himself for getting into a wreck and maybe losing out on his championship hopes. So you just really... you really don't know, and it is it's great that this happened, that they can learn from this, whether or not they want to do. Richard Childress, the owner of Richard Childress Racing, he himself was very vocal about being disappointed with the likes of Jimmy Johnson, Carla Edwards, and Dale Earnhardt Jr., saying the fans don't pay $100, pay $50, whatever the price is for a ticket, to see the main people that came to see, the Chase drivers, sitting back in the pack and not involving themselves into the race. And, you know, just something, again, you just got to think about. And Dale Earnhardt Jr. even mentioned that he felt knew exactly what the fans thought, and he actually felt bad. And he was like, you know what, I disappointed my fans, and I disappointed this Talladega race because me and Jimmy Johnson decided to stay at the back and not race. Dale, he doesn't have very many wins, and yes, he wants his win, but he cares. That's one thing he does care about, is his fans so much, and he feels like he let him down, and he apologized for that, and he was just like, this is not something I do. I'm not used to staying in the back. I come to Talladega, and I come to Daytona to race, and I'm just sad that my fans are leaving disappointed, and fans in general. It doesn't even have to be his fans. Just NASCAR fans in general are leaving this track disappointed with him and the others that stayed back in the pack. And you could call them coward lions or something like that because they decided to stay back and not race like real racers. And it was cool that Dale actually acknowledged that and apologized for that. And you can probably bet that next race, Dale's going to be up in the front, and he's not going to be sitting back of the crowd next Daytona Talladega race these next years. But going back to Carl a little bit, he has a 14-point lead. There was no apparent favorite coming through the first five races of the season. Now we're done with six. There's only four races to go. 1 month to the series. The season is over until February. And there was no favorite. It's just been so spread out. There's been just been either you're tying for the lead, you're only 4 points back, 7 points back, 10 points back. Just the points have been so close. And this is the first time. And we all knew this was going to happen. We knew Talladega was going to be the deciding factor to show who's going to be sitting in at that big table at the banquet and who's going to be sitting in those little ones looking down below. And even though Carl is very excited for this race and getting his points padded, there's someone lurking. Second place is his teammate, Matt Kenseth. This is the best, like I told you last week, this is the best Matt Kenseth has ever looked going into the chase. He probably looks better than he did in 2006. He was able to improve to second points. He was third last week. He is now second in the point standings. And this is what Carl had to say a little bit about this. A bunch of reporters are asking, can you breathe now? You got your 11th place finish. You are 14 points ahead of the leaders. Can you finally breathe? You're in the double digits. And he goes, we'd have to have a 100-point lead for me to take a breath. Anything can happen, especially since teammate Matt Kenseth, who knows what it takes to win a championship, is lurking. And, we're doing well. It's fun. I'm a little nervous about Matt, honestly, because I know how good he is, and I know how good his team is. Having him in second doesn't make me breathe easier, competitive-wise. And, of course, he knows how his team is. Him and Carl are teammates, which means they pretty much have the same cars under the belt. They have the same kind of people working at these cars. They might have different crew chiefs and sets of engineers and stuff, but everyone all works together. Everyone gets the same information. These are pretty much identical cars. Yeah, they're set up a little differently based on the kind of driver they are, but when it comes down to it, everything's pretty much the same. And knowing that, you know, it's going to be very interesting to watch what's going to happen, because knowing that he is so close to, they're so close together, these two are going to be the ones going out for the championship. And I will say, yes, I'm a big Jimmy fan. I am kind of starting to write him off. You never know what's going to happen. We'll talk about it next week, whether or not he can recover or not. But I will tell you, I will not be disappointed if Carl Edwards wins this championship. If there's anyone behind Jimmy that I would want to win the championship and that I would want to end Jimmy's his streak of five straight championships ending this, it would be Carl, because Carl has worked his butt off. And in 2008, he lost to Jimmy, and he has shown that he deserves this championship by the way he's been running in this chase and pretty much all year. He's been so good all year. I knew he was the one that we'd have to watch out for. I knew he was going to be the one to beat. And he's showing us that. And I really appreciate that. And I'm going to, if he wins, yes, I'll be sad because Jimmy wouldn't have won a championship. But I'm still going to be cheering for him because I've always liked Carl. He not only is he a great driver, but he is a nice guy. He is a good guy. He's one of those guys, he doesn't care how busy he is. He will stop and he will sign an autograph for you. Or, this is my favorite part. If you've ever noticed those people that actually follow NASCAR, if you're watching practices or even after a race and it's one of those daytime races, most drivers, they put on their sunglasses, do all their interviews. Carl, he has his sunglasses on. He takes them off, looks the reporter straight in the eye or the camera straight in the eye, and he talks. And that's how he does. He never has his sunglasses on. And, you know, and that is something we can appreciate because most drivers, they keep their sunglasses on. It's like, look at me. I'm so cool being secluded. I'm Mr. Mysterious. And we're just like, take the darn sunglasses off and talk to us with your eyes. And Carl does that. And that's something about his character and about kind of the person who he is. So if he does end up winning the championship, he's a great guy to represent the sport of NASCAR. So this is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. And after the break, we're going to listen to some of the this audio clip talking about the anatomy of a pit stop and more about the jobs of the driver and the crew chief during the pit stop. So we will be right back.
Shadow crosses my what it takes to form a
don't know you, but your pretty little eyes so blue are pulling me in like the moon on your skin. I'm so glad you trusted me to slide up on this dusty seat and let your hair down and get out of town. Got the stars coming out over my hood, and all I know now is it's going good. You got your hands up, you're rocking in my truck. You got the radio on, you're singing every song. I'm set on cruise control, I'm slowly losing hope of everything I've got. You're looking so damn hot, and I don't know what road we're on or where we've been from staring at you, girl. All I know is I don't want this night to end. Gonna cuss the morning when it comes, 'cause I know that the rising sun ain't no good for me, 'cause you'll have to leave. Gonna make the most of every mile, do anything to make your smile land on my lips. Get drunk on your kiss. Clock on the dash says 3:35. There's plenty of gas and the night's still alive. You got your hands up, you're rocking in my truck. You got the radio on, you're singing every song. I'm set on cruise control, I'm slowly losing hope of everything I've got. You're looking so damn hot, and I don't know what road we're on or where we've been from staring at you, girl. All I know is I don't want this night to end. Your hands up, you're rocking in my truck. You got the radio on, you're singing every song. I'm set on cruise control, I'm slowly losing hope of everything I've got. You're looking so damn hot, and I don't know what road we're on or where we've been from staring.
Welcome back to the Fastlane on radio.dominican.edu. As we previously mentioned on the show, a pit stop is a very complex part of the race. And what we really didn't mention is kind of the communications that go on between drivers and the crew chief. So when I was kind of doing research what to do for this garage talk section of the show, I came across this video and I was able to get the sound of it, and it's called Anatomy of a Pit Stop. And this is actually a five-part miniseries. They've premiered three parts. I'm going to show you one part, and it's pretty interesting. It tells it's hosted by Larry McReynolds, who used to be a crew chief in NASCAR before he retired. Now he is a NASCAR analyst, and he is interviewing NASCAR driver and chase contender. Well, not really contender. He's totally out of this thing. But he's a chase contender, Denny Hamlin, and Denny Hamlin's crew chief, Mike Ford. And they're just going to talk about the relationship they have on pit road, how adjustments go, what they do, how it's like getting on pit road. Larry Mack knows what he's talking about. He asked all the right questions. And it's a cool segment. So we're going to play that for you right now.
How's your car right there?
Just a little bit tight when I land in the center of green four.
This is going to be the competition yellow, so when they open pit road, just put tires on it and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, it's probably the right thing to do.
The communication, how strong the need is between you two guys. Yeah, about what your race car is doing, but making sure he also absolutely knows what you're doing on that pit stop.
It should be right side of the fuel and go half down right rear. Go on me. Go ahead and set the jack down me.
I try and get the information from Denny what the car is doing so that you can make your decisions on your adjustments as quickly as possible.
Still need some more rear grip. The rear grip you need is the family exit.
Yeah, I'm just too loose in, and it over-rotates just a little bit too much.
Or we'll work that track bar a little bit next.
You don't always broadcast your adjustments or what you're going to do. Sometimes you'll throw out because you know everybody is listening to you that, okay, instantly, okay, we're going to get four tires, knowing that the option for a two-tire stop is there. So you try and get feedback because we're listening to other guys as well.
Second gear, 4,600, pit road speed start. Now, four tires and fuel. How many guys are coming behind us, Curtis? Eight. Fuel only, half down right rear.
You know, Denny, I think at some of the bigger tracks, like a Pocono or a Michigan, yeah, the caution comes out. You have a little bit of time to talk to Mike about what that car did over the course of the run. But then you think about some of the shorter tracks where you almost don't even have time to think about what it's doing, like a Bristol. Maybe giving him some information, some good, short, concise information about that car, maybe even before the caution comes out. I know that's easier said than done, but that's pretty important too, isn't it?
It is, and you know, for me, depending on the racetrack, I'll give 10 lap updates, 15 lap updates. Sometimes I won't even give an update until, you know, I know we're 5 to 10 laps away from a pit stop. Just kind of depending on the racetrack.
The track's definitely tightening up on them. 10-4 going to make an air pressure adjustment, trying to help you on the backside.
You need to turn the center a little better. Also, I mean, that's where I'm losing a little bit of speed too.
I know it's going to be a very complicated problem that he's going to have to figure out, you know, loose in, tight middle, loose off. I'll tell him early to get his brain and all the engineers and get them all together to kind of think about what the adjustments they want to make.
When the caution comes out, to try and get that information so that we can decide what adjustments we're going to make prior to Denny coming to pit road, right before he comes to the commitment line.
How's your car right there?
I'm not going to nitpick it too much. We're really good through two and three. But one, we're a little bit tight in the center, and I think that's making me maybe a little bit free off.
It's a balancing act for sure. You never know what the right thing to do is, but you try to give as many updates as possible. The more information you can feed these guys, the better off you're going to be.
What is it like coming on the pit road under caution when there may be 30 or 35 cars and a sea of people and all these pit signs waving up and down? Is it truly hard to find yours?
It's so tough, and every week you're trying to raise your sign, lower your sign, and every time you do, guys are doing the same, so it's all over the place. The colors all mixed together, you can't hardly see. And so you rely a lot on basically him counting me down.
10 away, go. 5 away, wheel straight, put on the brake.
I really don't even start looking for the pit box until I hear 10 to go. And then I shift my focus to looking for that sign.
Does it seem like 12 or 13 seconds? Does it seem longer? Does it seem shorter when you're sitting in that race car?
I mean, it's amazing how I can feel 1 second difference. It's all about timing. I know when's the right time for the right side jack to drop. When's, you know, how fast, you know, they are working on the left side. I know what's a good stop and what's not. And, you know, those are the great feelings. When you know when that jack drops quick on the right, you got a great stop going. And really, that's the first key element, really, to having a good stop. It's getting that right side done quick. The left side always seems to be a little bit easier.
Clear out, all clear. Car feels pretty good.
Pretty cool stuff, isn't it? This is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. When we come back, we're going to take a short little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit of the lug nuts that are going on. Seeing what kind of happened behind the scenes, Talia, there is a couple things we wanted to talk about. So we will be right back.
Hey, walls in your face. You got the keys to me. I love your speckle on your face. Oh, I've never been so wrapped up, honey. I like the way you're everything I ever wanted. I had time to think it all over, and all I can say is come closer. Take a deep breath and jump in.
Welcome back to the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and we're about to wrap up the show, but I wanted to add in a little notes and lug nuts that came out of Talladega. One was the information between Trevor Bayne and Jeff Gordon. Trevor Bayne is not a full-time driver. You can consider him a rookie, but he was not really in it. He did win the Daytona 500. And Jeff Gordon, you know, he's in the chase, and he is, of course, the veteran. Everyone knows Jeff Gordon. And a little thing happened. At the end of the race, Bayne and Gordon hooked up. Those are the two drivers are hooking up. Jeff thought he was going to get a great finish out of it. But what happened is Bayne broke away from him, and Gordon ended up finishing and pretty much bailed on him. And Gordon finished 27th. Now, why is this? And they have something called Ford orders. And this is like a little... this is a little weird, but Trevor Bayne had a wild race, one that was especially weird considering that his fourth place qualifying spot. Bayne was sort of a free agent in this tandem drafting pool, and four drivers were under instructions that discouraged them from drafting with Chase contenders and other manufacturing camps. Bayne ran much of the day with Robbie Gordon, who is also, he's a go-go-homer. He's not full-time. He tries to be, but he's just not good enough to qualify. But Bayne ended up in the middle of an upfront drafting pack at the end of the race and was hooked up briefly with Jeff Gordon. Now, Jeff Gordon is Chevrolet. Bayne is Ford. And Bayne had orders not to stick with any chase contenders that were Chevrolet, Toyota. And they drafted successfully together back at Daytona in February, and that's where Bayne won the Daytona 500. Bayne broke away from Gordon in the closing miles, and after the race, he tweeted on his Twitter account that he wasn't pleased with the race and how it concluded, and he's not happy, and this is what he wrote. He says, "I'm not happy about what this has become." It's too premeditated. We should be able to go with whoever is around. I would have rather pulled over and finished last and tell Gordon I would work with him and then strong-armed into bailing. Gordon ended up finishing 27th. So it is an extremely sticky situation whether or not that Ford really should have instructed them to not hang around with each other. My opinions is hook up with whoever you want to. Go. Sounds a little weird. But when it comes to this, it's the end of the race. You got to choose whoever's there, whoever's going to get you up front. And it shouldn't matter if you're a Ford, Toyota, Chevrolet. Does not Dodge. It doesn't matter. You need someone to get you up front or you need to push someone up front. You're going to be there for him. And especially in this situation where Gordon has been such a big help to Bane. Bane didn't think he was going to have any kind of partners when it came to Daytona, both Daytona races and Talladega. And Jeff Gordon reached out to him as a veteran, came to a rookie and said, I'm going to be paired up with you during this race. I hope that's okay. And so, you know, yes, I know Trevor had the orders. I know he feels extremely bad for bailing on Gordon, but he owes him. He owes him, and Ford should have seen that, and Ford and his crew chief should have told Trevor's crew chief, whoever, the Wood brothers should have came on the radio and let Bane know that Gordon is an exception and that he could work with Gordon because Gordon has done so much for him already, and he could be doing so much in the future for him. So we're going to leave the show up on that note. This is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and we'll see you guys next week.